It's Jimbo Times.
Okay, yeah, let's do it. Go for it.
Okay, thank you so very much, Councilmember Anthony, for joining me this morning. Really, it's a pleasure. I first heard you speak at the ceasefire march in Hollywood back in November. And I thought, that's the kind of elected official that I need to hear more from during this time. So to be with you on this morning is really my great privilege. And I want to give you a moment to introduce yourself. Tell listeners out there, including folks who may be in LA County District 5, about you, and we'll take everything from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on here today. It's a interesting it's an interesting race that I'm currently in right now. This supervisor's seat, it's for District 5. LA County is divided into five districts, and the biggest issue that I find with this particular campaign is that most people have no idea what a county supervisor does.
Right.
This is sort of an unspoken, unknown seat of power in local government. The county supervisors run the bigger infrastructure departments around the county: Department of Public Health, LA Metro, the LA County jails. It's like a huge governing body that really supports a lot of the local communities and local city initiatives. And they are the governing body directly for the unincorporated parts of Los Angeles. So anywhere that's not a incorporated city, like Burbank or Glendale or Pasadena, has the county supervisors as their de facto city council or mayor. They do the zoning, they do the permitting. So like Universal City, most people don't know this, it's not actually a city. It's not an incorporated city under California state law. It's unincorporated. And a lot of places up in North County, like the High Desert, the Angeles National Forest, these are all unincorporated areas. So the seat I'm running for, District 5, it has a lot of authority on helping the real issues facing Angelenos, like homelessness and transit and affordable housing. These are, you know, big issues that we are hoping to tackle in my first term, in the first, you know, even few months of my campaign. It's really important that we get people to turn out in the March 5th primary and that they vote in this race. Most people will skip this race. They have no idea what it does. And it's basically an unknown. And that's just kind of sad, really, that that's what we're stuck with. But, you know, it is what it is. And I'm just trying to do the work of educating folks.
Well, that is certainly the case with this conversation, where I think it's so important for people to become familiar with what this position is to begin with. You mentioned, for example, that LA County oversees any unincorporated area, including an area such as Universal City. And the 5th District, to be certain, is also home to at least 83 unincorporated communities, especially in, as you noted, the High Desert. So it's a lot of communities that, as you put it, don't necessarily have a city council, don't necessarily have a mayor they vote for quite directly. And yet, at the same time, the opposite is true, because the county supervisor is these things. They are an executive and legislative representative for these communities, whether they know it or not. Most people don't know that. But to be sure, you're actually coming from Burbank as the former Burbank city mayor and as a current council member for the city of Burbank. So can you tell me a little bit about your relation with the county via Burbank or from this side of town, the media capital of the world?
Yeah, we did a lot of great work here in Burbank recently. I got elected in 2020, and my platform here was really about changing the way we operate local government. It's been very interesting to see how much work we were able to do in such a short span of time, specifically for the kinds of initiatives that we think is really beneficial to people. When we talk about homelessness, when we talk about affordable housing, we even did some work on tenant protections and gun control here in Burbank since I've been elected. We transformed our police department into a very different kind of policing, where we don't address homelessness as crime. We don't treat our unhoused as criminals. It's very different here. And we did all that in the last few years because I felt it was so very important for us to have that voice, that progressive voice on these city council discussions. One of the things that is mind-boggling to me is how much work we were able to do in Burbank without much assistance from the county. We have a county supervisor in District 5 that has not spent any of the Measure H dollars, any of the supports that we really require at the local city level. In fact, a report came out, an audit, just a week ago, that the County Board of Supervisors is sitting on $210 million from the Measure H program that is still waiting to be spent. It's disappointing. It's just disappointing. I'm hoping that the work that I'm doing here is going to really transform how we have this conversation countywide, that all the great stuff we've done in Burbank, all the great stuff I'm running on and campaigning on, is going to be a game changer for homelessness, affordable housing, gun control, renter protections, transit, environmental protections. We're even doing stuff with like animal rights. I mean, we transformed the animal shelter here in Burbank. It used to be under the police department and it was very much a enforcement mechanism. We transferred it to the parks department and now we've got a huge amount of volunteers and support systems. It's amazing to think of how much we've done here that I can transfer into the county level, and it's going to work. It'll work.
Yes, and to be sure, your tenure in Burbank is actually special for a few different reasons, including because you are the first socialist mayor elected to this office. And you can also say more about your tenure at this city, at the media capital of the world, if you so please.
Yeah, I was elected in 2020 as a candidate who was openly a Democratic Socialist. I campaigned on defund the police. I campaigned on Green New Deal. I was endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of Los Angeles. And the people here in the city were so enthusiastic for that campaign. I actually broke the record for most votes in city council history when I won my seat. It is a eye-opening transformation we've seen in LA politics, where they are not satisfied with the status quo. They are not satisfied with moderate reforms and complacency of, well, we can't do that much yet, or this is something that is too heavy of a lift for us to do right now, so we'll take half measures. That's been politics for decades now. And, the American people are tired of it. I don't campaign the way most politicians campaign. I don't take corporate money, for one. That is a big difference between me and almost every other candidate, not just running for my seat, but running for seats across the country. I don't take corporate donations. I also don't take money from real estate interests, so property developers, landlords, realtors. I don't take money from police associations. I don't take money from fossil fuel executives, health insurance executives. All of these nefarious, dark money institutions that have corrupted our political system are active in Southern California. And by standing up and saying, no, I don't take that kind of money, the voters, both progressive and conservative alike, supported me in my race. And I know a lot of people don't believe me when I say it, but I have a ton of conservative, even Trump voting supporters who like that I don't stand for the status quo, that I don't toe the party line, that I don't fall in line with the standard talking points of what our powerful and established government officials say. I push back. I always push back in both directions. I've criticized President Trump. I've criticized President Biden. When they do the good things that we need them to do, I praise them. And when they do things incorrectly, I'll be the first one to take them to task. And I do that at every level of government. So it's a different kind of politics. And I think this is the new norm. I think people are hungry for this kind of representation. Someone who is working class, someone who earned $22,000 last year, someone who's been homeless, someone who's been to jail, someone who has gone through bankruptcy, who's gone through divorce, who's never graduated college. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. I have so many things stacked against me that for me to even be in office is representative of so many folks who have never seen themselves in an elected position. And so I often get people contacting me through email, through phone call, through, you know, DMs on Twitter and Instagram, thanking me for running, thanking me for being in office, thanking me for standing up for whatever issue it is I'm running on, because they know that that's important, and they don't typically see politicians campaign that way.
I can definitely see this, and especially considering that when I first heard you speak back in November at the Hollywood Ceasefire March, I remember you noting that you would be rescinding your endorsement of Adam Schiff as a result of his position on this ongoing annihilation of the people of Palestine. And so I do remember registering that and thinking it's important that we have politicians with a backbone, politicians who are not taking corporate handouts at every level, speaking their mind, because that is what, as you put it, voters are hungry for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a big one. I mean, he's a very influential and powerful and well-liked elected official in my neighborhood in Burbank. He is often seen as the hero of Burbank. But I will point out that the local My Burbank News did hold a poll numerous years in a row of Burbank favorites. And so they have this list of like 30 or 40 different categories. And one of the categories there is local politician. And after I was elected, I beat Adam Schiff 2 years in a row as favorite local politician. So, you know, he's pretty popular, but I'm pretty popular too. And I have to remember that. I have to remember that no matter how powerful somebody is, the people run the show. The people are the voters. I remember thinking that during the writers and actors strike. We had a 6-month strike here in Burbank with two of the largest studios, Warner Brothers and Disney, in the city limits. And I went out and I marched with the writers and the actors, because I'm a SAG-AFTRA member, I'm a union member. And people told me, said, you can't do that. You're the mayor. You're the mayor of the city of Burbank, and you are protesting against two of our largest employers. And I said, okay, but the studios didn't elect me. I didn't get a single donation from the executives of this studio. None of the people who work in those top offices live in Burbank. So they're not even registered to vote here. But all the people you see marching, they live here. They voted for me and they put me in office. So I'm representing the people because this is where the people are. Famously, I was the only elected official in LA County to march at every single SAG-AFTRA and WGA picket over the 6 month time. I went to every single picket line at every single studio. I met with every single strike captain and all the people who were out there on the streets fighting for their wages and their protections and their, you know, right to have a career that could afford living in one of the most expensive areas in the country. It's ridiculous how little they were getting paid. And so fighting for them was important.
Yeah, going back to folks who make $22,000 a year or just about that range, I definitely encourage listeners to go and learn more about the healthcare mandates. That is how much people need to make, how much actors or writers need to make in order to be covered by healthcare. Most of them do not make over $30,000 a year. The vast majority don't. And so there's a real reason why these strikes took place as they did and why folks were as committed, similarly to yourself, as they were, given what they've dealt with for years and what they have to fight for if they're going to pave a healthier, more humane path for themselves. So shout out to your attendance at these strikes and actions consistently. I've certainly witnessed that from my point in the city. I'm also one of, say, Adam Schiff's constituents, and so I'm very much familiar with this scene, with this part of LA that we share in so many different ways. But to be certain, given the issues at play, and given even, say, your growing popularity over the last couple of years, one stat that you've cited more recently has been with respect to our unhoused neighbors in Burbank.
Yep.
And the fact that you and your administration, or you and your team, have really emphasized providing unhoused folks with housing as well as services in a one-stop shop, we can say. Tell me a little bit about how it is that you and your team have curbed or managed to curb homelessness, at least over the last couple of years in Burbank, decreasing the number of unhoused folks there and hopefully continuing to do so.
So when I got elected to office in 2020, we basically transformed our community outreach program towards homelessness. We had just recently hired a community outreach team called Streets Plus. And when I got into office, we made sure that policing was removed from homeless services. So we fundamentally ended the criminalization of homelessness in Burbank. We didn't do sweeps. We didn't move people, arrest them, send them out of town, whatever. We changed our platform to help them. So now if you're in Burbank and you call 911 and you say, hey, there's somebody sleeping on the street, we don't send a black and white unit anymore. We send an outreach team. We send a mental health team. If there is any potential for danger, the unit that is sent out has a non-uniformed officer. They're actually dressed down. They're in plain clothes or simplified uniform. We've found that that actually really helps the interaction versus a fully uniformed officer with a badge and a gun showing up with a black and white. It's changed our ability to get people housed. And we focused on support services. So now we talk to our unhoused neighbors. We get them the services they need. We sign them up for disability or Social Security or food stamps and get their EBT card and get their address set up. And we say, hey, who's someone we can contact? We get them in touch with their relatives. We find their last known address and friends and family. And we do the job of actually getting people off the street and back to their regular lives. Last year, the Toluca Times actually did an article on me. They showed that in the city of Burbank, we reduced homelessness by 8%. 8%. The rest of the county went up by 4%. So I have an excellent record. An excellent record. These are all initiatives based on my work in the city of Burbank. The most recent homeless count, we are seeing a decrease of 10%. So we're actually doing better this year than we did last year. Those numbers aren't finalized, but that's the projected numbers. So I have a record to run on for this seat at the county supervisor level. Everybody else who's running for this seat against me has no success in homelessness. In fact, they've all failed. In all of their jurisdictions, homelessness has gone up. I'm the only one with a decrease, a substantial, provable, data-driven decrease in total homelessness. And it's proven in the methods that we use. Karen Bass, when she got into office, called me. She said, "Hey, Mr. Mayor, what are you doing right in Burbank?" And so I sent her all of our policies. And in fact, she tried to get a lot of that stuff done at LA City. And unfortunately, LA City Council, which has actually, most people don't know this, more authority than the mayor of LA City, the council actually has the power of the purse and they can do line item vetoes on the budget. They blocked a lot of her initiatives. So I'm hoping we can flip a couple of seats at the LA City Council in March as well, so that Karen Bass can implement my policies in LA City. So I'll be working with her at the county level to really get these policies passed. But my focus is going to be really on the non-LA cities, right? So Glendale and Pasadena and Santa Clarita, Palmdale, Lancaster. I'll be helping Mayor Bass in the neighborhoods that are in my district, North Hollywood and Studio City and Valley Village, Los Feliz, Universal City, Toluca Lake. Absolutely, of course. But we need to look at the rest of the county. It's a regional issue. And the County Board of Supervisors runs the Department of Public Health, the Department of Mental Health, and the LA County Jails. Those are the three revolving door facilities right now that are not helping anybody. And those are the three institutions I want to tackle the most with regards to homelessness.
By all means, Councilmember Anthony. And when you mentioned this, when you mentioned shifting the initiative for homelessness, I'm compelled to ask you, especially when you say that you've decriminalized policies on homelessness, I have to ask you what, say, the Burbank Police Department's response has looked like with respect to that. Did you see an uproar? Did you face some backlash? Did folks say, now that our socialist mayor is essentially taking Burbank PD off of homelessness, at least in terms of arresting folks and incarcerating folks, now there's no way that we're going to get to make any progress with this issue? Tell me a little bit about what decriminalizing and defunding police work on homelessness in Burbank has actually entailed.
So we had pushback from the police union, from all of the old guard, as I call them, the older conservative members of the city, who were worried that I was actually going to do what I campaigned on and defund the police. It's funny, when I actually did it, I told them that's what I was going to do. Since I was elected to office, we've reduced the total Burbank Police Department budget by $9 million. So we defunded the Burbank Police by $9 million, and we did it without losing a single sworn officer. We had 160 positions in the city of Burbank for our police department. When I was elected, we have 160 positions today. So the stuff that I campaigned on, the issues that most people understood to be the essence of defund the police, was in reality what is now being touted as a reallocation of resources. That's how it's being framed today. So when we took homelessness out of the police department, a couple of things happened. A, we saved money. So when I got elected, we had the first balanced budget in 13 years. And today next month, we'll be approving a budget that has a five-year forecast of being in the black. So we have a positive balance for the next 5 years. So not only do I run on these progressive issues, I'm also fiscally responsible, which most people don't believe. They think I'm just a wildly spending kind of bureaucrat.
But we are extremely fiscally responsible here in Burbank, because I know if we don't have the money, we can't do the programs. So the other things that happened once we made those changes, the police response time got faster. So when we took police officers off the job of responding to homeless calls, they were actually able to respond to real crimes faster. So since I've been elected, police response times have gotten faster and crime has dropped. Every year I've been in office, crime has been lowered. So we have less crime, faster police response times, we saved money, and a recent survey has shown that our police department morale is the highest it's been in years. So, I mean, I don't know what else to tell people, but I am good for policing. I am good for police departments, even though people think I'm anti-police. In reality, what I am is somebody who is critical of modern policing. I believe there are better solutions and better ways of dealing with criminal justice, and we see it all around the world. We're the only country that still does 20th century policing. And so all I'm trying to do is get us into the 21st century. And it works if people just get out of the way and allow the folks who understand the policy to implement good policy. It works. So that's all I'm asking. And now I am running for this seat at the county level to take on the LA Sheriff's Department,
right,
which has been noted for its failures of policing. You know, Sheriff Luna came in with a very dysfunctional department, and he's trying to do his best to really change the culture. But there's almost 10,000 sheriff's deputies. It's going to take him a while. He needs the support of a county supervisor who's going to back him on these policies. Currently, in District 5, we have a very conservative incumbent who is all on board with resisting Sheriff Luna's reforms, with siding with the most regressive aspects of the police union, the ALADS, the Association of Los Angeles Deputies. They are fighting back against what Sheriff Luna is trying to do. And his stuff is just very basic reforms that almost every single police institution across the country has adapted at this point, except for the LA sheriffs. They are so far behind. And so to end that corruption, to end the violence, to end the, you know, the supposed gangs in a lot of these remote sheriff stations, we really need a county board of supervisors that's going to tackle this issue head on, as opposed to what's been going on lately, which is, oh, the sheriff will take care of it. It's all the sheriff's duty. No, it's not. You have to work in tandem. Just like I was mentioning earlier about LA City working with the LA mayor, the board of supervisors needs to work with the duly elected sheriff. They are two institutions that have to work together, along with the district attorney, which is elected countywide, and the county assessor, which is elected countywide. These are all county departments, and they are all partners in this. So that's why I'm basically running for this seat, because I know I can do the job.
And actually, council member, especially when you mention Robert Luna coming into an office in disarray, I also think it correlates so much, it parallels so much George Gascon's story, in that he has also come into a punitive and regressive and 20th century style set of policies, and has faced a lot of resistance and not a lot of critical background sustaining support from his colleagues, from those who are elected to work with his office. And so actually Supervisor Barger has come out and supported the ouster of George Gascon. And so it does speak to the way that Barger's office has certainly been in line with the sheriff's department and leaving things as is, leaving things to the office so that it might correct itself in a theoretical world. It definitely speaks to that approach, which is when you're looking to challenge significantly, including because of your track record with successfully reducing the police budget and keeping police officers there at work doing better work when it comes to crime and public safety, actually.
Yeah, it's so disappointing seeing how many folks are blaming George Gascon right now for things that aren't even in his purview or his ability to control. He is being lambasted right now for, you know, the rise of these smash and grab organized crime syndicates that came about after the pandemic and that he is actively trying to deal with, but he has such a dysfunctional unit, the district attorney's office, that it's very difficult for him to get things moving, especially because a lot of his deputy district attorneys were hired and appointed under the previous district attorney who was not in favor of these reforms. So he is getting a lot of resistance from the inside of his own institution. But to his credit, crime is down. Crime is down countywide. And most people aren't talking about that. They don't look at the district attorney and say, hey, crime is down. Thank you, George. The fact that he has made it his personal initiative to combat wage theft, this is another big issue in LA County. If you look at the dollar of it, you know, I'm not talking about violent crime. I'm talking about theft. The total dollars of theft in the county, the number one crime is wage theft, meaning your boss stealing money from the employees, whether through not paying you overtime or forcing you to clock in late or clock out early and still do the work, scamming tips, not allowing you to take breaks. All these wage thefts that are happening around the county, nobody's really talking about it, and he's the one going after these criminal bosses. And yet we're supposed to say, oh, he's lax on crime. He's not tough on crime. I'm sorry. He is. He is very tough on crime. And it's the crime that needs to be toughed on, if I could say it that way. It's just interesting. And so I'm hoping that we can get through this election without more sensationalism, without a bunch of, you know, nonsense talking points.
So-called independent expenditures.
Yeah, voters, please read the bottom of those mailers. You will see who is funding these leaflets. You're getting propaganda in the mail, but state of California has said all of this propaganda has to be marked with the person sending it. So if you read the bottom, you'll see majority funding from this person and the people who spend it is this person. And you will know if it's coming from a reputable source or not. So a lot of folks are ignoring that, even though it's right there on the bottom of the page.
Yeah, and I think that's a step forward in terms of getting more transparency about these campaigns to voters, right? But there's still a long way to go to get big money out of politics so that really electeds can run on fair races that are not dependent on massive multinational corporations to get ahead, which is what we see all across the political spectrum, not just in LA, but across our country.
Yeah, seriously, seriously.
So, council member, to be certain, I wanted to ask you about housing once again, because this is what Southern California and the LA County region is so concerned with on a day-to-day basis. We spoke about homelessness and housing insecurity in Burbank up to a point, but I want to ask you a little further about rent burden in Burbank as an example of what steps you and your team are taking to relieve renters of having to pay more than 50% of their income to stay housed. Can you tell us a little bit about the allotted requirement to keep up with housing demands in Burbank over the next decade and what the goal is there and how that might be replicated across the county with the fifth supervisor's district seat?
Yeah, so every city has a regional housing number allocation that they need to meet, meaning they have to build X number of units to stay with the California state allocated number of units required to house the number of people who live in the state. And of course, you know, people are continuing to have families and people are continuing to move to the state. So our population is growing and every single jurisdiction needs to do their fair share. So for Burbank, we need to build, I think it's upwards of 12,000 units in the next 6 to 7 years. And in fact, since I've been on city council, I have been able to approve more affordable housing construction than the prior 20 years on council. So we've approved hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of units, many of them affordable housing deed restricted units, all across the city in places where the development is not overly impactful to the community. We find the locations that could use the density, that are able to absorb the population increase, and we've made it work. And, you know, Burbank has grown, but the processes that we use to determine where to put housing has been a very arduous process because we don't want to, you know, overburden city resources and infrastructure, but we've done really well. In fact, you know, traffic fatalities have gone down. Traffic incidences have gone down. So when we think about where we're putting housing and where we're building housing, the number one issue that follows is where are people going to move? How do people get around the city? So we've done a lot of work to make sure that the infrastructure is viable. I want to do the same thing at the county. I want to build more affordable housing. I want to build it in neighborhoods that can handle it, that is not a tax on the infrastructure. And the construction is going to take a few years. In the meantime, we need stronger renter protections. So in Burbank, just last week, in fact, we finally got to put forward a motion for a rent stabilization ordinance that is going to be citywide, and it's looking at possible inclusions of a rent cap, of tenant protections, of no-fault eviction protections, a number of other really great possible pieces to this legislation would include right to counsel, would include a rent board, would include a rental registry. These are things that we're discussing in the city. And my hope is when this comes back to us in a couple of weeks, we're able to craft together a really great piece of legislation, much like other cities that have already done this, Culver, Pasadena, Inglewood, Beverly Hills. You know, everyone says, oh, I wish I could live in Beverly Hills. I wish I could live in Burbank. And I'm like, well, Beverly Hills has rent control. So, you know, it's a nice place. let's get some protections here in Burbank. We're also a nice place. So all of that to say, these are the kinds of things I want to bring countywide to the unincorporated areas of LA County and to the partnerships I would have with local smaller cities in the district. How do we build that affordable housing? Where do we build that affordable housing? And how can the county incentivize the kind of affordable housing that we want? One of the big problems we see coming from the state is that all of the developments up and down California that qualify as affordable housing and get all the density bonuses and the streamline ministerial review, they can build one bedroom and studio apartments all the live long day, and each of those units qualifies as affordable housing units. Right. Unfortunately, that really doesn't help the very large immigrant population or first and second generation population of LA County. We have a huge number of Hispanic and Armenian and Korean and Chinese and, you know, all kinds of folks. I'm Greek myself. You know, my mother was born in another country and they live 2, 3, 4 generations under one roof. We're not building the kind of multi-generational housing that the folks I meet every day who come from Mexico, who come from the Philippines, who are trying to get their parents to move in with them, who are having their kids come back from college with nowhere to stay. Like, they all want to live together. It's great. It's a wonderful community. but we're not building the kind of housing that facilitates that. And so what I want to do at the county is to incentivize 3 and 4 bedroom units. Just 2 weeks ago, Paul Krikorian, the LA City Council president, introduced a motion exactly identical to my proposed motion at the county. He saw what I was running on and ran with it. And I think it's a wonderful idea. You know, I don't try to hoard my ideas just for me. If it's a good idea and you want to implement it in your local jurisdiction, go for it. So that kind of sharing of ideas is important. I want to work with the local cities to have those partnerships. And I'm hoping that Mr. Krikorian can get that passed in LA City. And that way, when I take this seat at the county in January, there'll have already been movement towards these incentives and we can start to implement them regionally.
Right. And one note for our listeners just as well to recall here is that with 83 different unincorporated communities, there is a lot of room to build in County District 5, probably more room there than in any other district, just by sheer volume, because County District 5 is some 2,600 miles long. So there's a whole lot of housing to build. It is larger than most of the other districts combined. And so when we're talking housing in Southern California, when we're talking about where to build, Lancaster and the Antelope Valley and a number of these cities north of, say, the LA City line, they are going to have a big role to play in this. I want to ask you with respect to that, actually, what you anticipate in terms of resistance to more building, because this ends up being the situation for so many smaller cities, right? They somehow get to skirt away on the housing demands that they are required to meet. And yet years go by, these things end up in court. And at the end of the day, cities build maybe 3 or 4% of what they're required to, and the status quo remains in place. What do you anticipate in terms of resistance, and how might we gauge that at the county district level?
Well, I'll do you one better, and I'll actually push back on what you just said. I'm not interested in building housing in the Antelope Valley. I'm not. I'm interested in bringing jobs to the Antelope Valley. Because here's the deal. There has been huge growth in Palmdale, in Lancaster, in the High Desert, in Santa Clarita. Developers have been able to reign free up there. And they've built housing and huge units and all kinds of stuff. The problem is, now you've put all the folks who want to work in Los Angeles an hour away, an hour and a half in traffic up in Santa Clarita Valley and Antelope Valley. So I would actually like to bring jobs up to that region so that people don't have to commute, and really focus on building housing in the San Fernando and San Gabriel valleys. Mm. That is where we need to build housing, because that's where the job centers are. So I am one of those politicians that don't take money from developers. I don't take money from any corporations, any real estate interests, realtors, landlords, none of that. The incumbent currently takes hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars from the real estate lobby. And so she has been greenlighting all kinds of development up in Santa Clarita, Antelope Valley, and the High Desert, because she doesn't really care about where it builds or who it's building for. And she has zero interest in cutting down people's commute time. And so I'm actually going to push back against that. And if people want to build in those areas and the north part of the county, it has to be mixed use so that it brings commercial space with it, jobs and that kind of thing. Green space. I want to hold them to building green space on their development, and a 25% minimum requirement for affordable housing units. She has yet to do any of that. And so for me, looking at where the infill projects can be on these smaller communities, there's 22 cities in District 5. These smaller cities are the ones that push back because they have their own zoning and their own permits. And they say, oh, don't build here. My work as an effective legislator and politician is to build coalitions with people in those communities. And I already have. I know a lot of the mayors in those 22 cities. I know a lot of the city council members and a lot of the city managers and employees who work in the housing departments of those cities. My ability to work with them so that they don't have these sort of NIMBY streaks, these sort of resistances to the housing where we need to build the housing, that is the real work of this kind of governance. It's not on paper. It's not on a vote. It's rolling up your sleeves, showing up to the places where these people need to hear you, and having those difficult conversations and working through it with them, offering concessions, offering compromise, finding ways of mitigating certain factors. And then at the end of the day, pushing back against folks who don't want to do it. So, you know, there's carrot and there's stick, and I'm good with both.
On that note, you had just mentioned that outgoing City 2 representative Paul Krikorian has actually just introduced multiple room housing as a possibility for the SFV or his portion of the SFV. So as an example of the kind of coalition building that there may be real room for there, what you're saying is that we can take money and build inside of the cities despite the legacy and their sort of reputation, their infamy as NIMBYs for Southern California and LA County or LA City overall. You're saying we can, in fact, build nonetheless, because that is what is required of LA County, actually. We're nearly a million units behind, and County District 5 has a huge role to play in mitigating that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes to the point that, you know, the stuff that I'm running on, they're not necessarily my ideas. I don't really come up with these things. I pick them up from other advocates and other activists who are working on these issues, and I give them a voice. I flesh them out with real details, and then I present them as possibilities. And so the fact that Paul Krikorian took my idea as a valid way to build these 3- and 4-bedroom units, that means that we've done something right. You know, over the summer, I had a conversation with the mayor of Lancaster and his city manager about getting them to get their own police department so that they don't have to contract with the sheriffs. And I had a very difficult conversation with them. But guess what? 3 months later, what are they doing? They're getting their own police department. That was based on my plans and my proposals, and I brought it to them. I'm not even in the seat, and I'm already having these conversations and affecting local government across the county. So I'm effective at the job. I'd just really like to get paid for it.
Yeah, that's required. That's required. And just before we wrap up, actually, I want to ask you just one more thing in terms of infrastructure, because you mentioned, for example, if building is to be approved under your leadership in the Antelope Valley, then not only do we want multiple rooms for families who would be happy to make a living there, but we also want to make sure that they are multi-use, that they are job centers, and that they have green space. And so when it comes to green space, I want to ask you a little bit about water and how it is that we would plan to mitigate water, including through some of the rain that we've gotten over the last couple of years, so that we can actually successfully and sustainably green more of LA County, especially the high, what is known as the high desert.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things we definitely need to do countywide. We need to incentivize the changing over of people's lawns into drought-resistant turf. People have seen the changeover when they do native plants and how far less water it uses. It actually saves them money because they're not paying for the water bill. And then for the actual green spaces, the bigger parks that have grass that you can go play in, we need to transfer all of that over to the purple pipes, as it's called, the reclaimed water, the non-potable reuse. This is stuff that you can't drink, but is perfectly fine to use on green space. We need a massive investment in potable reuse, these purple pipes. And to facilitate that, I have a robust plan countywide to dam and well the storm drain infrastructure that we built 50 years ago. Right now, when it rains, all of that water in LA County runs through a series of channels. You've seen them in your neighborhood. It says, do not dump, drains to ocean. Those were all built decades ago to make sure that we didn't have any flooding or mudslides or water overrun. And all of that channel rushes into the ocean. There's some major spillways in San Pedro and Long Beach and Venice and Santa Monica, Manhattan Beach. There's all of these major spillways that take all the water from the LA Basin and rush it out into the ocean for safety. My plan is to stop the water right before it hits the ocean, dam it up right at the edge, and build a well. We can do two things. One, we can turn that into hydroelectric power, and we can start to massively save that rainwater and use it for non-potable reuse instead of letting it go into the ocean. Because once it hits the ocean and mixes with salt water, desalination is very difficult to do. It's very expensive. So we can change our infrastructure without much investment because it's already built. We just need to finish it off. And so what I want to do at the county level is get the Metropolitan Water District, MWD, and partner with them to build this system with the Measure W dollars that we already have. The taxes are there. The money is there. And we're just not spending it. So we have big reserves on Measure W. It won't cost the taxpayers a single dime. We're going to reallocate those fundings to these bigger water projects because we need water.
Absolutely. And to that point, I know that voters in 2018, I believe it was, passed Measure W. They've already approved of the notion that we should be recycling or reusing this water because it presents major opportunities for the region in terms of sustainability. And yet progress on that has been slow. You probably saw an article on the LA Times more recently that projects initially started up with bigger funding requests to start developing on that end, but that they have gotten smaller over the years. And so we're in need of more initiatives here. But I do think that we have, at the county level and at a regional level, really inspired more of the LA electorate to think in terms of sustainability. When we look at all the measures we've passed over the last decade, there's a reason why LA voters do in fact set trends in terms of progressive ways to work with the resources at our county.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, let's say that a voter is out there. They just learned that there is such a thing as County District 5, and they're considering voting for the first time. They see these candidates on the ballot. Tell me and tell us, what distinguishes your campaign from that of the rest of the pack here? Tell that voter why they need to fill it in for your candidacy over these others.
So I'm the only candidate that doesn't take corporate donations. That's first and foremost. The other people running, you know, there's two folks who are running for this seat who've taken over $1 million in corporate donations, real estate donations, big pharma, big oil. Fossil fuel donations have really packed in the numbers for my opponents. They've both cleared $1 million based on fossil fuel donations and health insurance donations, corporate PACs, all of the real estate lobby interests, the police. Oh my gosh, they've taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from police. I don't take any of that money. I don't. And in fact, I have more individual donations than all of my opponents combined. Meaning the people are behind me. I have individual contributors who pay $5, $10, $20, $25 to my campaign. I've raised over $100,000 in this race. And it's all due to people who are on the ground, who are interested in this election and want to see progress. They want to see somebody who stands up for their values and is one of them. I'm the only candidate in this entire race that actually has policy proposals on his website. None of the other candidates have any policy on their website. That way they're not held to account once they're in the office. Because then they can say, well, I never actually said I would do anything. And then when they do nothing, that's what you get. So my last plea, I guess, to the voters is you have to just vote with your heart. It's not a strategic thing. It's not some sort of calculated, you know, well, if this person gets in, then that person's not. Don't worry about any of that. Just vote for the one voter who you feel represents your values the most. And in fact, most people are doing that at this race. It's why we're expected to do very well. If we don't come in first, we're coming in a close second. And we're going to go to the runoff in November and be the strongest candidate. We are very excited to win this thing. And everyone who's looking at this race is telling me, my gosh, you've done it. You have threaded this delicate needle between two giant corporate candidates, and we've made an impact and we've gotten our name out there, and voters are excited. They are actively jumping on this train to really support the kind of local issues that they believe in.
Councilmember Anthony, thank you so much again for taking the time to join me on JT the LA Storyteller podcast. I look forward to seeing and hearing about more of your success on the campaign trail. For now, I know you've got just some 13-ish days before voters head to the polls or so.
Oh, boy.
And yep. I'm excited for you. I'm excited for the team. I really do think that this is a moment for Los Angeles as progressives in the city. So to that end, I'm very happy that now listeners can refer to this discussion as yet another one of those opportunities to really remake policy at the city and the county level here.
Well, thank you, JT. I appreciate your time.
Okay, you'll hear from me again soon. Until next
time. Thank you.
It's Jimbo times.